Thank you for the interest you have here in the subject. I think this subject is, I'm not sure how to say it, but it's an important subject, and it's close to many of us as parents' hearts, isn't it? Whole subject of training children. So we'd like to look at it, and I'm just going to say maybe that this is just scratching the subject just a little bit this afternoon, but we'd like to look at the subject of training children. In Proverbs, there's this little phrase that's used that says, train up a child in the way he should go. When he's old, he will not depart from it. This little word train, if you look it up in the original, and if you look at it, there's a couple different little things, nuggets, that is in the original Greek description of that. The one, it gives the picture of a mother teaching a child, a newborn child, to drink. Now, if you're a mom, and if there's a baby that's just been born, and the child doesn't know how to drink, and sometimes children get a hold and they start drinking right away. There's other times that the child, it's sort of a big thing to get the child to learn to drink. Now, this is actually what it says. It gives the illustration here of dates. And it says that if you take a date and chew it. Now, I don't like dates. I don't like these dates. I know there's some of you that might like dates, but I don't. But it says that if you take a date and you chew it, now you chew the date and chew it up, and then you take that chewed date, and then you take it inside the mouth of that newborn baby and up against it, its palate, and rub it up against, the roof of the mouth, this palate. If you rub it up in there and you rub this chewed date into the palate of a newborn, guess what will happen? That little baby will start doing this. Okay. And that's a part of the definition of training. Right? There's a lot of things when we look at our young children, there's a lot of things that we would like for them to become. We'd like for them to become mature adults. And training is that process that helps them become someone. That whole process. So I didn't know that till just recently, that that's what they would do. I mean, this is the original meaning of this word train. That's the original meaning of it. It gives that description. You take this little date that's been chewed and you put it up on that roof of the mouth, and the baby will start doing this. Well, that's interesting. Now, there's a secondary meaning that it gives for training, and that secondary meaning is to put a rope. Now, obviously these days, it's not commonly used to put a rope in the mouth of a horse. Normally, these days, it's a metal object rather than a rope. But the original meaning of this word train is to put this rope in the mouth to help guide it, to help guide the horse until it knows how to function. Now, there's an interesting little story that I want to tell you. My dad, back in the day when he had a girlfriend, he lived in Sugar Creek. My dad lived in Sugar Creek, and his girlfriend was up here toward Mount Hope, across from Bauman Harness Shop, that little house there right across from there. So when my dad went to see his girlfriend, he had a horse and buggy, and it's 14 miles from Sugar Creek up there to Mount Hope, toward Mount Hope. And on a Sunday evening, after he went to see his girlfriend, he had this horse. And by the way, I remember it as a young fella. I remember this horse. This horse that he had was, in its younger days, it had all kinds of energy. In fact, it came off the racetrack as a young horse. But my dad had it for quite a number of years. And guess what would happen? Sunday nights, it was an hour and a half journey home, that 14 miles, hour and a half, I'm guessing. I don't know. Some of you probably know better than me. But probably an hour and a half. We're on an hour and a half journey home. And on the way home, you know, he would come down County Road 77, and he'd get on State Route 39 all the way into Sugar Creek. And on the far side of Sugar Creek, he lived a quarter mile off of State Route 39. And on the way home, my dad would fall asleep. On the way home, my dad would fall asleep. And guess what the horse would do? He's a well-trained horse. And he did it often enough that he knew how to get home. And you know, these days, you know, there's cars with autopilots, you know, there's cars with all kinds of gadgets and gizmos, and I'm not sure what all you call it, but all kinds of automation that goes on in cars these days. But this was better than that. My dad would wake up when the horse stopped, you know, by the barn at home. Okay, he was a well-trained horse. Now, I like to suggest that when we look at training our children, there's a process from when it starts to, and there's a specific purpose, and there's a journey, and there's a process that we're bringing them to what they become, what they will become. And so when we think of training our children, it's a process. It's not something that happens overnight. You know, that thing of rubbing up in the roof of the mouth for that child, that child needs to develop this whole thing of drinking. That horse that I described to you, that's something that didn't just happen, but with time and doing things over and over, that horse came to the place where he learned how to, he wasn't all over the road, and when he came to the right road, he'd turn off all kinds of stuff, okay? Now, you know, that probably wouldn't work very well, you know, these days with all the traffic and everything that's happening these days. You know, it probably wouldn't work very well. But you get the point. There's a process and things that happen. Now, I'd like for us to just consider that there's something we're looking at for our children, and so there's a process of bringing them to that place. And there's a lot of parents, when they think of training children means spanking the child. Now, I like to suggest that that's a part of the whole discipline process, but that in itself is not training children. That in itself is not training children. it's a small part of the whole process to bring them to that place. Now, in Deuteronomy chapter 6, in verse 5, it gives a responsibility. Actually, in verse 5, it says, "And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. These words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them to their children." Now, that is a command, right? Now, I'd like to see who all from you are parents that have children. Raise your hand. We want to see who all this applies to. Yes, good. Okay, it's giving this instruction to you, right, and to me. Okay, so there's a specific instruction being given here, and it says, "Thou shalt teach them diligently." Can anyone help me with that word? Can we say it together? Diligently. That's a big thing. How are we supposed to teach them? Diligently. Yeah, good. Thank you. We're supposed to teach them diligently. "And shall talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. Thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thy hand, and thou shalt be they shall be as frontless between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house and on thy gates." Now, I would like to specifically make note here that this concept of training comes by continued guidance, continued training, continued discipline, continued steering of that wheel to bring them from where they are as a little infant to where they become a mature adult. Now, in saying that, this process of bringing them, they're not grandfathered into Christianity. They will come to the place where they are lost before God. And this journey that we're bringing them on is to help mold, shape, open their eyes to God, and to bring them to that place where they voluntarily open their heart and surrender their will to God. It's to help bring them to their place. It's not something we can just give them. Each one of them is going to have to open their heart to God when they come to that place. But it's to enable them to come to that place. Now, again, I don't know, are you following what I'm trying to say about the difference between just spanking and training? You know, are you getting that? There's a training process. And this afternoon when we talk about the training, you know, we won't be talking about the discipline. We're talking about the training. How to bring them from one place to another, training their will, helping them become mature adults at some point. Now, number two here, we want to talk about immediate obedience. Now, I don't know how I can stress or how I can communicate this in a way to help us get the foundation of this whole idea of our children obeying when they're given an instruction. Let me just give you some thoughts of how it goes in some homes. This is fairly normal for a mom and a dad, for the dad maybe to say, "Hey, Joe, could you go do the chores?" And dad goes about his merry way. And 5 minutes later, Joe is sitting over there on the couch with his nose in a book, and nothing happened. And you know what happens internally with dad? Guess what happens with dad? Dad's heartbeat rate goes up just a little bit. because son didn't obey. There's a little bit of a frustration comes, and dad again says, Joe, I want you to go do the chores. And well, it's different in every home, and maybe it's different between mom and dad. But children get to know mom and dad like really well. Okay? So what happens here is a child will normally go as far as they can, right? And your child will know exactly where that trigger point is. You know exactly. And maybe it's the third time and there's a higher level of frustration and a level of firmness, and son knows that's it right there. And guess what he does? Jumps up and he goes. And when that happens, there's not a lot of warm feelings between dad and son, is there? Right? There's not a lot of warm feelings there. In fact, there's frustrations there. I would like to suggest that picture, that scenario, we are instilling in our children how to respond to God when God one day starts knocking on our hearts. Now, I'm not sure exactly how old I was, but when I was around the age of 13, maybe 12, 13, I'm not sure exactly what age I was, but around the age of 12 or 13, I remember there being a conviction that started settling in my heart. And that conviction that started settling in my heart was God knocking on my door, right? There's conviction of sin. There's a knowledge of me not being right with God. There's a knowledge of somehow between me and God, I'm not ready. I'm not ready to meet him. That's God knocking on the heart. Now, what happens here, I like to suggest that the way that we train our children, that is very likely the way they're going to respond to God when God starts knocking on their heart. Very likely. And many times, for all of us, we've all heard children or youth, we've heard them talk about how God called them. They've maybe gotten converted. And, they've gotten converted and they talk about this, God started calling me and I pushed him off. Right? Have we all heard that? We've heard that how God, God called me and I just sort of, pushed him off. I'd like to suggest that this whole idea of obedience is very closely connected to the way our children respond to us, is very likely the way they'll respond to God when God starts knocking on their heart. And so for us, if we have this frustration, this little picture that I gave you with Joe, if that's a normal process that starts happening, I want to ask you a question. How strong does God have to be? How strong does God have to be to get their attention? Right? Okay, when dad or mom's voice sort of gets up there pretty good, and there's a level of firmness and there's a level of, son, I want you to go do the chores now. Can you follow? Okay, how firm does God have to be till we surrender our will? And that's not only at conversion. I like to suggest that happens when God starts calling him, but it's also a conditioning them for the future years. So it's not only conversion, but a conditioning for the future years. Now, the question comes, so how do you do that? How do you do that? How do you get a child to just simply respond and obey when they are asked to. Now, I'm going to give you a couple of suggestions here that hopefully it can help you. So this is a good way, and maybe there's other ways, but let me just tell you what is normal for us at our house. When we give an instruction, when instruction is given, I might say, Ken, okay, he's married now. Ken, could you go do the chores? There's an expectation that he gives eye contact and there's some type of a response. Okay, do you follow what's happening? He's giving attention and he's giving a response. So all of a sudden, there's a feeling of responsibility that happens. 5 minutes later, I don't have to question, did he hear? Okay, you know how that goes, mom and dad? How sometimes we're like, did he hear? Or why isn't he gone? Or what's happening? You follow that? Okay, if there's, hey Ken, could you go do the chores? And he looks and he says, okay, yeah, I'll take care of it. 5 minutes later, if somehow it didn't follow through, we know there's a clear disobedience going on here. And for clear disobedience, then there's correction, as in a spanking or some other thing that happens, okay? Look, do you follow that? There's a responsibility that's given and taken. There's a response from the child back. And if there's that level of communication going on and responsibility and an expectation that the first time that instruction is given, they take that responsibility, all of a sudden, there's just harmonious flowing happening in the home. It just clearly moves forward in a very solid way. Now, we have 8 children. There's 5 that are married. There's 3 at home. They're all, at this point, they're all converted, except the youngest is 10 years old. And at this point, all of our 7 children, when they came to the place where God started knocking on their hearts, they came to mom and dad and said, we think maybe God is starting to call us. Guess what they were doing? They were opening their hearts. They were opening their hearts. Why? Because there was an authority knocking and trying to do this. Isn't that beautiful? I would like to suggest that this concept has so much to do with the big picture. And sometimes we're narrow-minded, we're right here. But I'm just going to suggest it's a part of the big picture. There's one command that's given in Scripture to children, and it's this: children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. Okay, there it is. And if a child learns to do that well, it's unbelievable the things that happen as a result of that. Immediate obedience. Eye contact, a clear command, a response back. I might have a son, sitting on the couch reading a book, and he might say, hey, Dad, could I finish this chapter? It'll only take me 2 minutes and then I can go. And I can say, well, yeah, sure. All right, that's okay, right? It's okay, but there's clear direction, clear expectation, and a clear follow through. Here's another heading that I have: communicating direction. Now, many times, us as parents, there are situations that we face that are very difficult and hard. I remember being at work one day, and Martha gives me a call, and she's crying. And there's a situation with one of our boys, and, you know, if you have seven boys and one girl, you know, it's almost like it's the boys. It's one of the boys. And she was crying, and she says this. She says, I tried to discipline our son, and he just didn't respond. In fact, he doesn't. He's not allowing me to spank him, and you know, it was just a big situation. Well, you know, that evening, you know, I gave some direction, and that evening, you know, we came home, and I had to spend a lot of time with him. But there's those times that we face situations when giving a spanking, and then 2 hours later giving another spanking, and there are things that happen that it feels like we don't get through. Have you ever faced that? You know, we don't get through. I would like to suggest that, okay, we need to continue the discipline, the spanking. We need to continue that. But I'd like to suggest that there's times that we need to sit down with our son or our daughter and help them think through the longer term, okay? Yeah, sometimes there are situations where we face that a spanking somehow just doesn't get through. And you might not win every battle, but we need to win the war, right? The situations that come through, you won't be able to get through every time or every situation with everything that happens. But we're here, and you're focused on, you're praying about it, and you're focusing in, and the goal is to bring him over here. Okay, now there's a communicating the heart and vision. If there's a certain situation that somehow it just feels like you can't get through, sit down with that son or daughter and just help them to think through it. It might be the way they're relating to their siblings. It might be disobedience. But you sit down, and I'll give you one example. Now, one of our sons started lying. And we sat down, and we talked with him, and we explained how that lying, if you lie at our home, if you lie, that is of a higher consequence, because the Bible says that liars go to hell. Okay, so we put some things into place, and some time went on, and he lied to me, and I knew he lied. And that evening, I don't know how to explain this, but that evening I spent a number of hours with him. And yes, he did get a very strong spanking. But I sat there, and we talked, we cried, and we communicated. But I tried to share with him how to get on the other side. What will happen if he doesn't change his ways? It's not about just not obeying right now. But these are habits that are formed. This is something that somehow, if he's the age that I am and he doesn't learn to stop lying, the things that are going to happen in his life are awful. And we just talked about those things. And we talked about people that he knows that have, you know, just gone out and left field, and, you know, and the things that happened, and we just talked. And then we put things into place where in the evening when he goes to bed, that's something we pray about. We ask God that God would help him. Okay, do you follow? We're communicating and talking to get him, to get his heart to move forward. Okay, you can spank, you know, and you can just have these situations where you just, all kinds of stuff. Okay, but we're trying to communicate the heart and be able to dialogue and talk with them until their heart shifts and moves and they get the want to. Okay? Communicating the heart and vision. You know, I told my son that evening, I just asked him, you know, how would you like it if you'd ask me a question, I'd just lie to you? Well, I wouldn't like that. You know, how would you like if mom would just lie to you? Well, I wouldn't like that. Well, what about, you know, your siblings? Well, how would you like if they would just lie to you? Okay. Do you follow? It's getting him to think. It's communicating. It's helping him think. It's helping him think through these things. Here's another one, arguing. Some time ago, I taught on the subject of arguing, or I had it as a small part of a sermon, and in talking about the argument, there's a dad that came to me later, and he said this. He said, at our home, there used to be a lot of arguing at our home, and when there's this teaching about arguing, we went home and we just talked about it as a family. And he said, at our home, we used to argue a lot at the table. You know, we used to argue. And we decided that day that arguing is going to stop. Okay, you know what's happening with arguing? Okay, our children need to understand it. So I tell Mark, you know, so-and-so happened, and Mark says, oh, no, this is how it was. And I say, no, absolutely not. I mean, I know this is, you know. Okay, and there's actually a competition to be right. It's a lifting my own opinion above the other, and it's not esteeming the other higher than ourselves. And by the way, there's it's a part of pride. It's a part of arrogance. It's a part of that whole thing. Arguing is something that we need to help our children learn to just not do. Arguing in the home. Arguing is something that we have to talk with our children and say, that is arguing. What, you know, what's happening there? You know, that's arguing. And this is the way that you should respond. If you disagree with what they're saying, it's okay to say, well, I thought this is how it was, but it's okay if it's unresolved, all right? Right? Isn't it okay? You know, it's okay if it's an unresolved issue. And, you know, and if there's this arguing going on, it's still unresolved, right? But this is pride and this arrogance that lifts ourselves up. Our children need to be okay to voice their opinion and then leave it. Find rest with that. Here's another heading that I have. Criticizing a child's character or correcting their wrongdoing. I know that all of us know people who are, you know, you've heard the term, have an inferiority complex, all right? Or they're just very inferior. You know, who knows people like that? Yep. We know people who are inferior. Well, let me maybe give us a little bit of a clue where that comes from. Many times, those things are developed in the home. And many times those things develop because there's a father and a mother that are constantly, what I'm going to say, criticizing their children or scolding their children. Scolding their children in a demeaning way. And I'm just going to say, I'm going to use some strong language. I'm going to say scolding your children in a demeaning way is sin. All right? Now let me explain what I mean by that. If I look at my, or if I tell one of my sons and I say, son, you're just a slop. Why are you just so sloppy? You know, why are you just so sloppy? I'd like to suggest that that terminology and the attitude is wrong. It's wrong for us to do that. And when a mom and a dad are constantly using that terminology to their children, then that child comes to the place where they view themselves as, I'm just a slop. I'm just a no good. I can't do anything right. I'm just a slop. They view themselves that way. Now, there's a lot of terminology that's used in that way. Here's some others. There are other things that are used like, you're just so stubborn. Why are you so stubborn? You know, you're just a stubborn child. Or maybe you're a rebel. You're a no good. Okay, those terminologies are sometimes used by good-meaning parents to try to change them to become good. And I'm going to tell you, we are instilling in their hearts a wrong way of thinking. Now, let me explain. A child might be sloppy, right? You know, we have children that tended to be sloppy. And by the way, at our home, sometimes, you know, we have all these boys and they do the cleaning and the laundry and the dishes and all that. And when it came to doing cleaning the bathroom, Martha would say, for one of them, she'd say, just do it fast, quick. And the end result was, he actually did just a nice job. And there was others that were, you know, if you'd say fast, you know, they wouldn't get anything done. They're just boom, boom, and there's no cleaning done. You know, for the other one, she'd have to say, make sure you spend plenty of time and do a good job, right? Right? Okay, so there's lots of differences. Okay, now, here's the point. The point that I'm trying to say is sometimes they're sloppy. Sometimes they're stubborn. Sometimes there is actually rebellion, okay? I'm saying those things need dealt with, but the way to do it is to simply talk and say, hey, son, you know, what you're doing there, that's actually stubbornness. And the Bible talks about stubbornness. And that's an action. That's something that we're asking you to change. We want you to change. We'd like for you, you know, when we ask you to do this or when we are wanting you to do this, don't just resist. Don't just be stubborn, but choose to just open yourself and to respond. Choose, okay, this, you know, what you did here, that's actually stubbornness, right? Okay, do you see the difference? The one is demeaning to their character, and the other helps them move from one place to another. And so we're talking about training children, right? We want them to change from the things that they're not doing like they should. We're helping them change from one thing to the other. But we do that by helping them see and understand and then choose to change. Now, here are words that are frequently used, and I'm going to give you these phrases. You're always so stubborn. You're always just a slop. You're lazy. Now, you know, sometimes our children are lazy, right? And we want them to move forward. And we talk with our children and say, hey, you know, what's happening here? This is actually laziness. And we don't want you to grow up to be lazy. We want you to change. This is what I want you to do. Okay, follow? You know, they're not just a lazy bum. They're not just lazy. Okay, it's okay to point out an action that we want them to change. But there's a huge difference between pointing out an action and helping them change or demeaning their character by scolding and calling them names. Huge difference. You're just a no good. You're a rebel. You never do what I tell you to do. You're just a slop. Well, what happens is if those terminology and phrases and those things are used, children actually grow up and they feel like they can never accomplish. And you know people like that, right? You know people that feel like they can never get on the other side. you feel like they just never. And by the way, let me just give you a little, you know, in this whole thing of helping them change, let me give you a little story. So one of our sons, you know, some children are very decisive. Ask them a question, they're yes, no. Yes, I want to do that, or no, I don't. Okay, they're very decisive. Others, like, I don't know. Yeah, have you ever seen that? You ask them, well, I don't know. You know, you ask them another question, I don't know. And you ask them something, well, I don't care. Well, you know, whatever. One of our sons, you know, that's how he responded, right? And Martha and I sat there saying, how can we help move? You know, one day he's going to be a man. One day he's going to be the head of the house. One day he's going to need to guide his wife and children. One day he's going to need to lead the home. How do we help him? You know, if that's how he does, I don't know. You know, he'll probably marry someone and she'll guide the house, right? And she'll ask him, I don't know. And then she'll make the decisions, right? I don't know. So this is what we did. Now, Martha and I sat down with him and we just talked about it. And we said, okay, now, and we gave him the long-term picture. And we said, you know, one day you're probably going to be a dad and a husband. And we'd like for you to learn how to make decisions. And we said, many times you don't know which is the best. And I gave him a couple of illustrations. You know, which is best with these two? And I said, sometimes I don't know which is best. But even if I don't know which is best, I need to make a decision what I think is the best. And if that somehow changes, it's okay to change with that. But there's a need to make a choice and a decision. And we told him, this is what we're going to do. When things come up, we're going to ask you what you think about it. And we would like for you to actually start making decisions. Even if you don't know which is best, make it a choice. And, you know, just make a decision. Well, this is what I'm going to do. Okay, start making decisions. And we're going to help you. So for the next 6 months, we kept talking about it. From time to time, we'd sit down with him and we'd talk about it. And guess what? Today, he makes decisions. He's decisive. It's, you know, there's none of this. Well, I don't know. You know, it's all gone. Okay, do you think that's training? Okay, we could have been demeaning to him. You know, we could have said, well, you know, you're just so indecisive. Why don't you make decisions? And okay, do you follow? But we helped him choose, decide, see the big picture, and take steps forward in his life. And today, those things are all great. All at a good place. Wonderful, you know. But it's a part of that whole process. Now, here's another heading. Is teaching children responsibility. Teaching children responsibility. Now, that's a big one, isn't it? Teaching our children responsibility. How do we make that our children, our boys and our girls, grow up and they learn to be responsible adults? Now, I'm sure all of you have seen situations where when there's all kinds of work around, you might have a 19 and 20-year-old that just sit around and dad says, well, hey, this needs done and so-and-so needs done. And you're like, why didn't they just see the work and just go do it, right? How do you get them to be responsible adults? How do you do that? Now, I'm going to just give you some ideas, okay? Again, we're training, right? We're training our children. We're helping them become responsible children. And ultimately, we're trying to help them get the big picture so they can serve God in a free way that's a blessing to everyone involved. Now, training them responsibility. Here's some ideas. Putting little charts together. Now, in our home, and by the way, Martha, you know, my wife, she's good at this. Putting these little charts together. And you've got one chart that says, and it has all their names to it. And on Monday, for breakfast and for lunch and for the evening supper, it has everything divided. Which of the children does the dishes? Which of them cleans off the table? Which of them dries the dishes? And it has on there, and by the way here, I'm sorry if I'm getting boring, but I know this is afternoon, and so we're not going to have any sleeping here this morning, or this afternoon. We're not going to have any sleeping here. So what happens here is there's an expectation for the laundry. There's an expectation for the chores. And you know, there's seven boys and one girl. And so when you get up in the morning, there's an expectation that they all go have their quiet time. There's an expectation for the chores, and mom and dad are not there telling all the children what all to do. All of the children, they know what's over there on that cupboard door. They know that. And they open it up. Oh, I'm on to do the chores. So without mom and dad telling them anything, the chores get done. Right? They know in the morning at 7 o'clock, and they know in the afternoon at 4 o'clock, the chores get done. They know that. Mom and dad are not telling them to go do it. It's on that list. On that list is their responsibility. You sit down and have a meal. And after the meal, mom and dad are not telling the children, go do the dishes. Go clear the table. Mom and dad are not telling them to do. How do you think they get done? Anyone? On the list. And whose responsibility is it to know what's on the list? It's their responsibility. And if the dishes don't get happen, or if it doesn't happen, then what? Well, then there's consequences for not following through, right? So all of a sudden, there's the laundry, there's the dishes, there's the chores, there's breakfast, making breakfast. All of those things can be just have these nice little charts and everything. And what happens is children learn to take responsibility. They learn at a certain time, this is what I'm going to be doing. And they learn to do it without mom and dad having to every time tell them what to do. Now, at work, you know, we have a couple employees. And my foreman, he would come and tell me every time that another son would start, this is what he'd tell me. He'd say, Mark, I can just depend on it that every one of the boys coming through, I just love it because they are responsible young men. Why do you think they're responsible? Because they learn responsibility. It's a way to teach them to be responsible. They learn what they need to do, and mom and dad, it takes a big load off of mom and dad, and things just happen. Now, obviously, there's obviously guidance today. I mean, you all know that. I'm making it sound really easy here. You know, it's not all that easy peasy, right? We all know that. I'm just going to tell you, teaching them to be responsible is huge. It's huge. Here's another one. Habits. I want to talk about habits for a minute. Now, there's a lot of habits that our children have at times that are good. And there's a lot of habits that our children have that are not good. Have you ever seen the bad habits? Have you ever seen those bad habits? And sometimes you've seen the good habits. I'd like to suggest that our goal is to identify the bad habits and try to curb them, and in its place, try to put in good habits, right? Good habits. We're trying to instill good habits. Now, I'm going to mention a bunch of bad habits. And these bad habits are habits that we, as the days and the weeks and months went by, we endeavored to curb these habits because it totally changes the whole atmosphere in the home if there's good habits versus bad habits, right? And I'm going to mention a number of bad habits. Whining and complaining is a bad habit. And so whining and complaining, those are things that we need to help our children come to the place where they recognize that, oh, that's whining. All of us men, we know very, very well that on the workplace, we work with people and adults whine and complain, only it's a little bit different than children, right? I mean, there's plenty of whining and complaining as adults around. Only it sounds a little bit more sanctified, but it's really not. It's just, you know, sometimes employers, they scratch their heads and they're like, how can I help the situation? And at the bottom of it is you have an adult that didn't learn to stop whining and complaining when they're young. And there's an adult and they don't view it as that. Now, you know, all of you men here, you would never think of crawling in behind the couch and pouting. You'd never think of that. I mean, I know you never do that. But there's adults that when an authority at work tells them what to do, there's a bit of sullenness goes on for the next 3 days. Right? Okay, what is that other than pouting? Right? Or whining, okay, adults, when your employer tells you what to do, you'd never go, whoa, you know, why do I have to do this? Whoa, you know, you'd never do that. Adults don't do that. But they do it in a different way. They say, well, you know, and they have this reason why that isn't the greatest idea, and they have that reason why they isn't the greatest idea, and you know, they have all these reasonings and all this stuff, right? Rather than just cheerfully, if there are thoughts to give, share the thoughts, but then go on, right? And submit to the employer, right? Okay, do you follow? I mean, there's so many adults that whine and complain just like children, only in a quote sanctified adult way. Moms and dads, if we can teach our children to quit that when they're young, we're helping them tons. We're helping them so much. Talking back when instruction is given. Pouting. Bad attitudes. There's plenty of adults that have bad attitudes, right? I mean, it shows up everywhere. Adults with bad attitudes. And they didn't just start having bad attitudes when they were adults. They didn't start that. It started when they were young. Here's another one. Sighing when instruction is given. Mom or dad tells them to do something. Yeah, that should never happen, right? That should never happen in our home. Never, ever. All right? It's a sign of that heart. We're helping our children learn these things and respond in a right way as a young child. And respond rightly as a teenager. Here's another one. Screaming or teasing, learning the boundaries. Now let me just talk about this whole teasing thing. Yeah, Larry, do you ever tease? Yeah, he does. Huh. I do too sometimes, right? Okay, teasing. Here's the thing. Children many times don't know where boundaries are. Now, am I right that there's a little bit of place for a little bit of, you know, just a little bit of, you know, jolly, just a little bit of teasing. But it doesn't go very long. All of a sudden, it goes over the bump and someone's crying, right? Right? Oh. Our children don't know where those boundaries are. And there's a bunch of adults that don't either. Right? A bunch of adults that don't either. We need to learn to teach our children where those boundaries are and to help them know what is good-natured, friendly, right, but then boundaries. They need to learn that. And those are things that they do. They learn those things by us instructing and telling them. You know, we walk through a situation, we tell them, you know, this would have been okay, but when you did this, this was over the edge, right? And we talk to them, we help them learn that. Trying to keep my eyes on that clock, we're getting pretty close here. Here's another one, slamming doors, running through the house. Okay, let me give you some good habits. Here's some good habits. Some good habits are personal daily Bible reading in the morning. I think all of us know very well that to have personal daily Bible reading can be a challenge when we're busy. But us helping our children establish good, healthy habits really helps them long term. There ought to be expectations in our house that when our children get up, there's certain routines that they follow. And I know for us, our sons, they work or they start early in the morning. And so for some of our sons, getting up early in the morning, as in starting work at 6, for some of them, they still would rather get up early enough in the morning, have quiet time, and then go to work. And there's, you know, because they're morning people, right? They're morning people. There's others that it just doesn't work. You know, it doesn't work for me. I'm not a morning person. I would, in the evening is much easier for me. And so it is with some of ours. But helping them establish routines that in the evening they have their routines or in the morning, but establishing routines, you know. In the morning, what's left at home, they get up in the morning and they come upstairs and they sit down and they have their quiet time. Mom and Dad don't tell them. And by the way, it's not gaining them any merits to get to heaven. It's not doing that. But it's helping them establish routines that are going to help them long term and make their life easy. Once they become converted, it's helping them establish routines. There's a lot of good habits that we can help them, like getting up with an alarm clock. How many of you have your children get up with alarm clocks? Raise your hand. That's a good portion. That's good. That's wonderful. Well, that's one of those that I won't give you the long story. I could give you a nice story about it. But the short version is, I'm going to tell you the short version. The short version of the story is that I didn't learn to get up with an alarm clock till after I was married. And the first morning I had to go to work after I was married, I got up with an alarm clock because I wasn't going to force my wife to wake me up. That's the short version of it. And I could give you all kinds of funny stories in the meanwhile, but I won't. Okay. I'll just make it nice and sweet. But let me tell you, isn't that a shame to me? Poor me. You know, I decided finally that this is bad. I mean, even on my wedding day, my mom got me up on my wedding day to my mom woke me up that morning. You know, what a shame. Children can learn to get up. You know, children can get up, you know, and by the way, that's not always easy. Presently, you know, we have one alarm clock that has a vibrator on the bed and a like really loud loud, blasting alarm, and the vibrator, and he gets up with that. But it works, right? They learn that. We learn things. And by the way, we all learn with alarm clocks. During the night, when Martha has to get up and she sets her alarm, I never hear that alarm. I never hear it. But I hear mine. Why? Because I've taught my ear to hear it. And for the children, she never hears mine and I never hear hers, right? We teach, all that's taught. But I like to suggest that we teach ourselves those things. I'm just going to mention a couple good ones here yet. Good habits. Cheery good mornings. Get up in the morning and smile at each other. Say good morning. I had guys that I work with that complained to my boss because I said good morning to him in the morning. What a shame. Here's another one. Smiling at each other. You walk into the house and you smile at your children. You walk in your house and you smile to your wife. Please, thank you. Learning to enjoy each other. Learning to be pleasant. Learning to respect older people. Opening the doors for older people. Learning to keep their rooms in a good orderly fashion and making the beds and all kinds of stuff. You can go on and on. There's all kinds of good habits that we can learn. I like to suggest moms and dads teach our children lots of good habits. It will help them in the years to come. It's time that I have to stop. Lord bless you.